Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Chibnall created Broadchurch, the TV series that first explored the dark underbelly of the rural village. He's also one of the very few people who was given absolute control of the Doctor Who legacy. And now he's written, believe it or not, his first novel. And it's a murder mystery, of course, set in the countryside. But it has you eye. Every farmer, hairdresser, bar worker with suspicion all the way right to the end. Death at the White Hart. It is out now. Chris Chibnall joins us from a studio in beautiful Dorchester. Good morning to you, Chris.
Good morning, Oliver. How are you?
Very well, thank you. The southwest of England, that's home to you, is that right?
It is, yeah. I lived here 20 years now.
Is it a sleepy place or is it a buzzing place? What is it like?
It's a bit of everything, really, because there's a number of towns. You know, I'm speaking to you from Dorchester, which is the nearest train station to where I live. So it's about 20 minutes away to the market town of Bridport. And then around there, there's lots of villages surrounding these towns. But it's a real mix of things, real mix of people.
You love your market towns, which we'll come to in a second. But you've been writing all your life, but never a novel before. Why did you decide to, it was time now?
Well, I'd wanted to do it for a long time. It's like being a proper writer, isn't it? Doing a novel. And I'd had some offers when I was doing Broadchurch, but then I went on to do Doctor Who, yeah. And then finishing Doctor Who, I came out of that thinking, what's on the creative bucket list that I really want to do now? And the novel was top of that. So I wrote some sample chapters, gave it a go, and here we are.
And you've always been a fan of the murder mystery genre.
I really have, yeah, yeah. I mean, like a lot of people, I read a lot of Agatha Christie, yeah, in my sort of early teenage years. I feel
really?
Like she's a gateway drug into reading, and then you're hooked into murder mysteries forever. So I used to borrow a book a week from the library and read that. So I feel like I read all of Agatha Christie in that sort of 5 or 6 year period. So then it's just in you then, isn't it? And your taste develops during that period. So it's a genre I really, really love.
Is it the kind of the thrill of experiencing that fear, particularly as a teenager, without any of the consequences? Or is it the puzzle element that intrigued you?
I think it's both of them, isn't it? It's a real, both of those are really good points about what's great about the genre. I think you're also seeing, I mean, number one, yes, there's a puzzle, and a murder mystery is participatory, isn't it? As a reader, you're not just sort of passively reading the novel, you're decoding it and you're going, oh, is that a clue? Is that a red herring? Why did they say that? Where were they that Tuesday? And I love that about being a reader of a novel like this. Definitely that puzzle aspect is big. But I also think they're just great ways to examine what the world is like. You know, if you're doing a contemporary setting like Death at the White Hart is, it's like, mm-hmm, what's happening in the world now? What's happening in a village? What's happening in a pub? And you do it through the prism of a murder mystery, and you're looking at people who are behaving in extremis and under suspicion, and so it's just a really good frame in which to think about how we're all living our lives right now.
Death at the White Hart, it is set today, as you say, but it still feels like an old-fashioned mystery because you planted the clues, and when I got to them, I'm going, oh, that was there all along, and I hadn't spotted it at all.
That makes me really happy.
This has worked. Yeah. You must labour hard to put those, or you must have laboured hard to settle on what you wanted as your first novel, because you can only have your first novel once.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I really wanted to work in a genre that I loved and knew and felt comfortable with. So that was one of the reasons for choosing it. But also, I just thought, oh, it felt like a delicious idea. And I really love that you say that it feels like an old-fashioned murder mystery novel, but set now, because that was exactly the thing, that sort of golden age of detective novels. I really love those because they're really satisfying as a reader, hopefully. And when you're saying, oh, OK, well, I can see all the clues now, but I didn't pick them all up as I go. That's really great. That game with the reader is part of what I love about it.
I was describing it to someone yesterday and he said, oh, I don't like gory novels. And I was thinking to myself, although the novel opens very in a gruesome sort of fashion, there's no specific gratuitous descriptions of blood and violence.
No, it's a haunting image, I think, the discovery of a body in the middle of the road with deer antlers tied to his head. But after that, there's nothing, there's no violent descriptions, there's no horrific, you know, gory violence described. It's much more about the emotional stories, the psychological stories, and the lives of the people in the novel.
Can I just step back a little bit, back into your writing career? Because before writing, I think one of your earlier jobs in TV sounds horrendous. A job in the football archives of Sky.
You've really done your research. It's like, this is your life.
It's a good team in here.
Yeah, that's right. It was one of my first jobs coming out of university. It was back in the wilds of, I think, 91, 92. And I was, it was when Sky Sports was starting up. And when Sky was starting up, and it was just a little warehouse in the corner of Austerley near London. And I just got a job there. They just bought BSB, another satellite company, and they had this big pile of videotapes that of all the Italian football matches that had ever been screened on the other channel, and they were like, "Could you put those onto a computer system?" So I was sitting there in this, in the height of summer, in this freezing tape vault, in a parka coat, with no natural light, putting them onto a system there. But it was that summer that Sky got the Premier League rights, and they saw this kid sitting in the corner of a dark tape vault, and we're like, "Oh, we need a system next year for the Premier League of football." Like, having sort of logging every shot, every close-up of Alex Ferguson, or every free kick, and so that they could do those sort of incredible music montage pieces that we take for granted now. And they were like, "We're going to create this system. Do you want to come and do it? Because it looks like you can type." And so it was like being in the right place at the right time. So I did that for the first year or two of the Premier League. So it was a funny job.
Yeah, it's a strange entry to television, considering where you end up. Was that as monotonous and as dull as it sounds, or it sounds like you enjoyed it towards the end there?
Well, definitely the sitting in a freezing tape vault in the height of August in a big thick coat was just
not great.
Yeah, was boring and monotonous. But you know, it paid, and that was really important. But the actual doing the football archiving on the Premier League was really interesting, because it was setting up a whole new system, and also it was just that time. It was a bit like the Wild West there, because now obviously the Sky and people who broadcast the football worldwide, they're just huge global enterprises. Then it was a warehouse just outside of London, and there weren't enough staff. Everybody was making it up as they went along, and so it was pretty cool. And actually, what you got to do is, because there weren't enough staff, often they'd come in and go, "Can you just come and help out on Super Sunday this Sunday?" And they said, "If you're not doing anything this Sunday, come up to Old Trafford, and we've got George Best on as a guest, and just come and look after him for the day while he's at Old Trafford." Yeah, so those kind of things, which are really crazy things that you'd never get an opportunity to do again.
Oh, you'll have to write about football at some point.
I wrote a play actually a few years ago about a football manager, because I also did, in the sort of odd jobs that I did before, while I was trying to be a writer but not managing to kind of get paid for it. I also worked for a theatre company. They did a tour of one night sort of theatre shows with Tommy Doherty and Malcolm Allison. So I toured the country with Tommy Doherty and Malcolm Allison, sort of stage managing and hosting the evening, where they would tell their stories and then answer questions from the audience. So I'm one of the few people to be able to say I've played Leeds City Variety Music Hall with Tommy Doherty and Malcolm Allison.
And of course, if you were looking after George Best as a guest, what was he like?
Oh, he was absolutely delightful. Very shy, very humble, very kind to everyone, and he sort of pulled up at the back of Old Trafford in a chauffeur-driven car, and there were just all, of course, loads of fans all around the entrance where they thought he'd be arriving. Everybody had, albums, photo albums, old programs for him to sign, and people tried to get in the car with him, and so you sort of had a glimpse of what that was still like, and I guess that would have been 92, 93 maybe, what that was like for him. And then he sort of emerged through that, and I walked him through to the studio, and it was just very, very down to earth, very, very humble, and just seemed very shy, but lovely, really incredible experience that you just don't expect.
Amazing. That's an amazing experience. I think he's dead 20 years ago this year, a very sad end.
Right, yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Back to where we were. Apparently, I'm told in the latest series of The Traitors, a contestant kept saying, "What self-respecting murder mystery doesn't have a priest?" And here we are at the White Hart. No priest, or you're no cleric or minister.
Well. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, I had a priest in Broadchurch, and a sort of really central mm-hmm. character in that. But I think the publican, as you know, father of the confessional, I think is a really interesting
very
character.
Tough.
So I think, so I do think, you know, the character who's murdered Jim Tynan, who runs the White Hart pub, I think he is the village father confessor, if you like, and
yes,
knows,
he knows
all
everything.
The secrets.
Yes.
Yeah, has secrets of his own, and also even more so because people slip up in a pub, don't they? You know, people's
That's
guard.
Right.
Is down. So, yeah, I think he performs that function in this narrative.
You've been saying these English market towns have been a little overlooked by television and
yeah.
other media for quite some time. This is why you like to give it the spotlight.
Yeah, I think a lot of narrative, a lot of drama and a lot of novels are sort of urban set and about the sort of sleek and glossy drama in big shiny cities, and I think most people's lives take place in market towns and suburban towns and villages, and I think the lives and the rhythm of life that happens in these places is what most people have in their lives. It's most people's experience. So, but I also think what we've all been through is a huge change in the last 10 to 12 years,
yeah.
where so many people's jobs and livelihoods have been disrupted, and it's happened in sort of a quiet way, but the characters in the novel are all dealing with that. So there's a guy in his 60s who's a delivery driver who's being tracked on an app every minute of the day. There's somebody who's running an Airbnb. There's a woman who's here under the Homes for Ukraine refugee scheme.
Yes,
but
very
I think
up to date.
The big disruptions in lives that you read in the news trickle down over years, and then suddenly people are working in the gig economy, the regular jobs aren't there, there's a thing with the lead detective Nicola Bridge in the novel, who's come back to Dorset. She's Dorset born, and then she's gone off to Liverpool for a couple of decades to be a detective. She comes back to Dorset and finds even the police infrastructure is crumbling. There isn't an HQ, there isn't Wi-Fi. They have to set up camp in a disused bank. It's like these things of the certainties we all had mm-hmm. 10 to 12 years ago are now not there, and we're all having to adapt. And that's what I really wanted to write about, along with a big twisty turny full of suspects and clues murder mystery.
I gather when you were writing Broadchurch that you had some city producers who didn't quite believe that life in a village could revolve around the pub, or that people would know each other as they walked down the street.
It was the journalists, actually. It was the reviewers who,
oh, really?
When it came out, it was the London reviewers who would write about it and go, there's a scene at the beginning of Broadchurch where a character walks down the street and says hello and knows everybody that they meet, and this is a complete fairy tale fiction.
Okay.
Now, I suspect I don't have to tell your listeners
no.
that is the reality yeah. of day-to-day life in these communities. And if I walk down the street, or if I walk down the street with my wife or my sons, it's like, yeah, you do know people, and it's part of what makes life. It was interesting listening to Raymond, your previous guest, and it's like he just embodies those values.
Yeah, because he just knows everybody, and that's his whole business, is to be
yeah,
too friendly.
Yeah, and it's why we love living in places like this.
There are many times in your story where we could easily be in Ireland, especially the troublesome farmer Deacons. And you walk us through his house and the description where it's basically a tool shed with a bedroom. I mean, everyone in rural Ireland will know that person and often underestimate that person at their peril.
Yeah, I'm really glad you say that. That's really fantastic. And it's interesting coming on and talking to you about the novel, because it does feel like there are resonances. So that's great to hear. And yes, Deakins, the farmer, who is underestimated, who is alone, who is having to work incredibly hard. He's having to carry the burden of the farm that's been in his family for decades. Mm. And it's sort of the other people around this kind of treat him like a bit of a caricature. But what I hope in the novel is you get really a sense of his life and his burdens.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad you picked up on that character. Thank you.
And the history, of course, as well, which would resonate with people, the attitudes in the area to their whole family lineage.
Yeah, and the ghosts of the past and the things, the events that have taken place 100 years ago, it's sort of there's a big strand in the novel which connects into folklore, almost folk horror, but ritual, but also what families and what your ancestors have done before you, and everybody's living. But I think the past is very present in all these communities, because it's that's probably the difference with setting a story in a city, where it's all about the present tense and the future tense. It's like the past, it informs the present so strongly in all these communities, because it's there and it's in the landscape and it's in the weather and it's in all of the monuments that you're seeing around everywhere. It's that things don't shift as fast.
You're writing about very local places to you. How happy are your neighbours with depictions, whether it's Broadchurch or indeed in this novel now?
So far, they've been great. I mean, all the places I use, it's set in West Dorset where I live, but the places aren't real places, so they're like compound places. So the main village in the novel is called Fleetcombe, and it's an example of a West Dorset village. I could name you four or five that, if I glued them all together, you'd get a vague feeling of Fleetcombe, and you probably have villages in your mind when you're reading the novel and thinking, oh yeah, it's got a bit of that and a bit of the other one. People have always been really supportive. When we did Broadchurch, I was quite worried, and particularly at the point where we had to show, or decided to show, wanted to show, I should say, the first episode to everybody who lived in the area where we'd been filming, and that's where I lived as well, and been living there about 10, 12 years at that point. And we showed it in the local arts centre. Everybody in the town came in, and about 10 minutes before we were due to show it and press play, I suddenly thought, oh my goodness, if everybody in this art centre in town hates that, if it doesn't go well, I'm going to be hounded out of my hometown. I was like, I really hadn't thought about it until that point, and the fear that coursed through my veins for the next hour was pretty strong. But luckily, it went well, and actually, everybody really took it on board, and there were Broadchurch tours, and you can still do a little Broadchurch walking trail if you come to West Bay and Dorset. So yeah, it went okay in the end, but yeah, there was absolutely a moment where I thought I may have underestimated this.
You said 20 years you're in this area. Are you still considered an outsider there?
Yeah, of course. I mean, my youngest son, who is just going to be 19 in June, he was born in Dorset, so I guess he counts as a local. But I think somebody said that you're a local after three generations, so it's a high bar, you know. But I'm happy to be. Yeah, I'm a local, but not a native.
Oh, really? We call them blow-ins here, the outsiders.
I think that's it. Yeah,
same phrase, isn't it, over there?
Yeah, it is definitely the same phrase. Yeah, yeah.
You're extremely busy with many other things besides, and I'm glad to hear there is a sequel, because obviously the police detectives are very important in a murder mystery novel, and Nicola and Westlife, to nickname the younger detective, they're coming back.
They are, yeah. So I'm writing book two at the moment, and that will be out next year. And yeah, I really wanted to build hopefully a series of novels where you are staying with them as they have to deal with different cases each time in a different location.
And this brand new novel is already, it's going to be made by ITV.
It is, yeah.
Wow.
It all happened very fast. I'm still reeling from it, but yeah, we're going to film it next year in West Dorset and make it for ITV. My company's going to do it. I'm going to adapt it, and it's a really lovely chance to get that landscape back onto screen again. And you know, yeah, so it's great.
And you've just finished adapting Agatha Christie novel. Which one?
The Seven Dials Mystery. It's one of her early novels. I think she wrote it in 1929, and I've adapted that for Netflix, and we've got Mia McKenna-Bruce and Martin Freeman and Helena Bonham Carter in it, and it's a really lovely, it's a three-part mystery set in 1925. Lots of stately homes and old cars and chases and masked balls. It's lovely. It's a bit of a hoot.
And Doctor Who has obviously gone on. You had your couple of years there. Have you been following the new series? We just started there last weekend.
I have, yes. I'm still very good friends with a lot of the people who make the show. So I know Russell T. Davis, who's come back as showrunner, and yes, we were just texting yesterday. So yeah, you'd stay in touch with all that. And Doctor Who is in my blood. So, yeah, I'll always follow it.
It must have been very stressful because the fans of Doctor Who, they're worse than the Swifties.
But they're also lovely. What's been so amazing is doing this book tour, the amount of Doctor Who fans who come up and they will bring paintings of characters, they'll bring DVD box sets as well as the novel to be signed. And so many people will say, you know, that story meant so much to me, that story saved my life, that was the story of me and my father. You know, amidst all of that, the sci-fi and the monsters and the fantasy and the history, it's still a story that really resonates emotionally with people. So
still
it's been
huge.
Really
and moving. Gone to the Americans, yeah, as well. But in the meantime, we've enough to be doing with the first novel. Congratulations again. Death at the White Hart. Chris Chibnall, has been an absolute pleasure.
Same for me. Thank you so much.
Have a lovely day.